Welcome to episode 58 of the Putting Couch, the video Putting Couch series here. We are with Pat O'Brien. This is part two of our series, and this will be a two-part series this time. But Pat O'Brien is the director of instruction at Lakewood Country Club. Pat O'Brien is very, very well-known Seymourians around the world. If you've been to the Seymour website in the last 20 years, you've probably spent a little bit of time with Pat. The beautiful thing about Pat is that his mission is just to help golfers. He wants golfers to enjoy the game more. He's at a beautiful country club. He's very, very self-deprecating. Pat, you're just a great guy to be with and to hang around. But I think the wisdom that you have when it comes to helping golfers putt better is something that cannot be overstated. It's not just Payne Stewart, not just Zach Johnson, Vaughn Taylor. Players at all levels have come to us and talked about all the tournaments that they've won and how they've become a much better player by working with you. And it's just the right amount. It's not, you know, panic level, call Pat O'Brien, 911. I've got to come over there on Monday and talk to you about my putting. It's usually we're working towards something and it's a lot of fun and I get it. So Pat, you help golfers to implement a system. And it's the Masters week. We just talked about it. And in 2007, out of nowhere, one of the highest ranked players ever to come and win the Masters was Zach Johnson. And Zach Johnson had been working with you since his days on the Hooters Tour. And he had worked with you to implement a system. He's a system guy. Anybody that's gotten to know Zach Johnson, I mean, he is really, really diligent about the way he goes to work. And he worked with you, Pat. And I'm not going to say it was complicated, but he gave it time. You mentioned that in episode one. Tell us a little bit more about how that whole thing took place. And then we talked about he won back to back to back on the junior tour. And then I think his third or his fourth time on the PGA Tour. I think his fourth, I mean, it might have been his fourth event in Atlanta. He wins and plays on the Ryder Cup team and then wins the Masters and wins 12 more times and is one of the great players in golf history, really. But he really worked with you from, I mean, I suspect the first time you saw him and met him, I don't believe he was in the top 100 players in the world. Tell us about that.
No, yeah. So my first job, really real job, was as a Seymour rep. And it was the, what was it back then? The buy.com tour, I think, back in 2000. And that's where I first met him and Vaughn. And they were buddies and they were traveling together. So I started working with them both. And they both had conditional status and they didn't keep it that year, but they kept the putters and they kept the information and they kept working on it. And they both had some good tournaments that year. But then, as I said, Zach called me and he said, "Hey, I really like this putter. I'm going to put it in play." And he wins three mini tour events in a row. And that was in 03. And then I think 04, he gets on tour and he gets his card and he like you said, he wins shortly thereafter. And then he just starts building and building. And the thing I admire most about him and his career is just the confidence that he has. I mean, talk about being self-assured and he just kind of wind him up and let him go. And he had that system. And so then we go to the Ryder Cup and they're nice enough to bring me over there. And that was one of the coolest experiences of my life. And he played well there. And I think that, you know, was a big springboard for him that he could, hey, I can really play at this level and above. So we go to the Masters in 07 and both he and Vaughn had qualified for it. And they were both playing well. And it was a crazy year. It was, you know, cold and windy and conditions were super sharp. And I was there from, I think, Monday through Friday. I had to go back to Dallas for a clinic on Saturday. And actually snowed in Dallas on that Saturday, which is wild. But that was just this whole cold front along the southeast and the east. And lo and behold, those guys played really well through 3 days. And they're both tied for, I think they were tied for, I mean, they're in the top 10. I know. I think they're in the third to the last group
playing together. Yeah.
Played together.
Crazy.
Incredible. So, crazy.
A client of mine calls me. He says, you can't miss this. You have to be there. So I'm going to use Delta miles and I'm going to fly you back. So I caught the 5 a.m. flight out of Dallas to Atlanta and drove up there and got there in plenty of time. And, you know, they're warming up, and Vaughn's a little bit more, you know, overcome by the moment, let's say, and Zach's not, you know, and you could just tell. And I was on the putting green with them, which is, I mean, surreal, right before the Masters, you know, right before they tee off. And Zach's, he's raring to go. You can just tell. My job is just to stay out of the way and confirm things. Hey, you look great. I love you, buddy. Go get it. You know? And so we followed along, and it just became clear early on that something special was going on. And, you know, he hit the ball great, and he putted great. And it was just, I mean, next to Payne Stewart, that's the most surreal experience professionally that I've ever had, you know, to see him win, to go into the Butler cabin, you know, to try on the jacket, to have him mention me and Mike Bender and Morris Pickens. And I mean, just what a yeah, way
the team. To
launch yeah. a career. Right. Yeah, really. And, you know, and that shortly after I went to Lakewood, and I've been there now 17 years, and it was a springboard for all of us, really. And it yeah. was, I'm truly blessed to have been able to experience all that.
I'd say we have been blessed. And those are the two nicest guys I've ever met in professional golf. And I think it doesn't surprise me that they had identified you and had you become a trusted part of their team. And I mean, I'd actually say that, again, Seymour's rifle scope technology, the red dot and the two white lines, it's as relevant today as it was in 2015 when Zach won the British Open, in 2007 when he won the Masters, and in 1999 when Payne Stewart won the U.S. Open. It takes away a lot of the doubt. It allows you to be as confident as you can be. And in that particular moment, while both played great, and over that course of that week, I want to say at one time or another, I want to say on Friday at one point in time, Zach was leading. On Saturday at one point in time, I believe Vaughn was leading. And then on Sunday, while they were both back a little bit, and you know, they both I mean, these were guys that had been rookie Ryder Cuppers the year before, and neither one of them, I mean, was by historical standards ready to compete in the Masters, and yet here they both were, Pat. And with you by their side, I know that has to be one of the all-time moments. And I think, you know, both of them, the putting strokes that they had, they both, while they putted, I mean, people would recognize them, not just for their Seymour putters, but for the way they putted, just the fact that everybody wanted to putt like those guys because they had something that other people couldn't understand. And yet it's still available to your students today.
Absolutely. And to talk about two totally different personalities and styles. You know, Vaughn had a much more of a kind of a fluid, languid type stroke, and Zach had a much quicker stroke because it matched his personality, and it didn't matter. It worked for both of them in different ways, because again, they had fundamentals, they had proper ball position and setup and alignment. They knew, you know, probably the most important thing in all my years of teaching that I've learned about people, and I call it the moment of truth, when you get to the ball and you connect to the picture, do things match up? You know, can you see your line? Do you know where you're aiming? And that's when you have that, you have everything, because then you can calm down. You can truly let it go. So knowing where you're aiming, and that ties into having a pretty neutral eye line and, you know, being able to tell what's a square putter, which is obviously right up Seymour's alley.
Yeah. Well, I know Zach and I believe maybe Vaughn to a lesser extent, but both of them, I mean, the great players, I mean, Tiger Woods as well. And I mean, Phil Mickelson, a lot of them, when they practice their putting, you can notice their routines, that they do come out, and they also seem to have a system to the way that they practice. And sometimes the guys that maybe aren't winning all the tournaments, you sort of look at them and you sort of recognize that there's not the same sense of a maybe systematic way to practice. Tell us a little bit about some of the ways that you think, you know, besides, I mean, let's be honest here. If every golfer could book a time with you, Pat, and head down to Dallas at some point in time, first of all, your sheet would be probably overflowing. But I do think that there's something to be said for actually having a putting guru like Pat O'Brien work with you and teach you some simple stuff. But once you come away from that, everything you've talked about, how often do you practice it? How do you practice it? How do you know that you're on the right, that you're doing the right stuff?
Well, great question. Everybody's different. You know, some people are very structured and routines and, you know, engineer brains, and they like structure and they like drills. And some people are much more on the creative side or free flowing, and they really don't. You know, you can be a great putter and not really practice a whole lot. Honestly, I don't. I hardly ever practice because I know my fundamentals. You know, I might grab a putter at home if I'm going to go play the night before and, you know, just go over some stuff and get on a hardwood floor, which is maybe the greatest training aid you could have, because you can see what square is and how to look down your line and calibrate your aim. So I've been playing enough golf in my life where I have a sense of feel, and most golfers do, when they can truly get out of the way and let their instincts take over. So there is no one way to practice. You have to find out what works for you. And, you know, we can give you drills or we can give you games, and that was Zach Johnson style, or we could give you a little bit more free flow like a Vaughn Taylor or other guys. And you just find out what works for you and don't put yourself in a box. I had a conversation with a kid that I, you know, college golfer the other day about this, and he was so, it freed him up so much that he, you mean I don't have to do this drill? You mean I don't? No, you don't. You just have to like know your setup and know your tendencies and then fix them when it comes up.
I think what you also give everyone is confidence when it comes to putting, just listening to you, understanding the simplicity. And I think that's one of the hardest things a golfer can have when it comes to putting is confidence, because, you know, we've had Dr. Bob Winters on in the past, and just the negativity of how simple a negative thought can come in, especially in putting, but actually golf in general, on a bad shot. So having to stay confident in the putting stroke and knowing that, like you talk about, the fundamentals behind it that allow you to have that feeling gives you an edge above everybody else. And that could be the reason why Zach, you know, putted so well there at the Masters, is just the confidence. Because, you know, we've been lucky enough to been at Augusta during the Masters, and just walking around that place to begin with is scary. You don't want to do anything wrong or mess anything up, whatever. So just imagine teeing off and making putts on those greens. So I think you have to be confident when it comes to putting. And that's the one thing you offer those people in your teaching, is the ability to, it's okay to make a mistake, but know why you made the mistake and let's see how we can fix it. And the confidence that brings to someone, you're on a whole different, you know, another level than everybody else.
Yeah. Knowledge is power. Knowing your tendencies and knowing to fix them is, I mean, that could be the greatest gift as a golfer that you could have, really. And because, you know, there's no guesswork. The worst feeling, even when you're not playing well, and you can relate it to swing too, but you know what you're working on, and you know, you know, okay, here's my tendency. Maybe I'm falling back into it, but I know what I need to work on. There's much less frustration than if you're out there going, what in the world am I doing right now? And that's true for golf swing. It's true for putting. And putting, you know, that my job's so much easier in that arena than it is on the lesson tee with full swing, because it's really is most of the time a pretty easy fix. It's a short stroke. It's not a very complicated motion, you know? And so you get the fundamentals right, then boom, off you go, and the confidence comes back. It got to the really towards when I, you know, towards the end of our relationship with Zach as a student and teacher, where it was really just for confirmation. You know, I'd see him and I'd just, hey, everything looks good. And that would, you know, ease his mind and send him back into the stratosphere, and off he went again. And that's really all he needed. And that's, again, that's the way it should be.
You're with him every day. I know that, because all those years of instilling this system, I mean, it's with him every day. And he got to the point where, like you said, he said, hey, yeah, Dad, I'm a grown person now. I'm a grown man, and I can go and do this, because I think it was, yeah. And the thing about Zach Johnson, the thing about Vaughn, and certainly Tiger Woods, is, you know, they don't seem to fear putting. They don't seem to fear, you know, missing. They feel like every putt, you know, can be made to go back to something that I know Dr. Winters and you, Pat, both sort of believe is that, you know, every putt can be made, of course. And, you know, you keep that positive attitude, and you're not going to make every putt, though. And you're going to actually have bad putting rounds. And the one thing about, you know, I know Vaughn, Zach, when they were out there is that, you know, they didn't constantly at the end of every round. They didn't go back and beat themselves up over what in the world went wrong. And because it seems like so many golfers, when that happens and they don't have a system in place like you've instilled with the Seymour putter, it's just on to the next. And whatever I'm doing now, it stopped working. It's, you know, because it's not, I guess it's not fundamental enough, right? If it doesn't, if it's really not in, if it's not a true system, then it's snake oil, right? And it could be momentum. You can capture lightning in a bottle. You can play well for a week or 2 weeks or a month. But if you don't have that, you just mentioned something to fall back on, you're going to go searching again. And every time you search and every time you change up, I assume you're just bringing in new patterns, right, into your brain, and it's going to be tougher to be good over the long term, right?
Yeah, new variables, right? And more things to think about, let's say, as opposed to, again, going back to a root cause. You know, one of the things I see so often that really literally handcuffs a golfer is ball position. I think there's an old paradigm out there that you're supposed to play the ball in the middle of your stance. Well, number one, why? And number two, if you're, let's say you're a right-handed golfer and you just take your left arm and you bring it inside your left leg where it hangs naturally. Well, that ball position is going to be a lot further up than in the middle of your stance. So I can't tell you how much I see that, or this is where we start, where, you know, anytime you go further back than that, your left arm gets tied up right up here and it gets stuck. It doesn't want to rotate and it certainly gets stuck through impact. And so your putting stroke is essentially ruined at that point. And, you know, you can maybe make some compensations or put band-aids on, but as we know, they don't last. So just that one simple thing is going to free up emotion and get somebody better right away. So, you know, just things like that. Because if you never change that, my gosh, you'd be searching for forever to figure out, you know, something that works, and it's fleeting at best.
Now, I do think one of the common denominators, I think, with a lot of your students and with people that, you know, adopt Seymour putters is that shaft tends to be pretty much straight up and straight down. And you mentioned, like with Zach Johnson, the comments that, oh, Zach, he's playing it way back in his stance. But I, as you mentioned, some of that is sort of the optical illusion, which actually, as we all watch the Payne Stewart putt made over and over and over in the next 60 days, it's going to be all over TV. It's going to be all over. And it's going to be all about Payne Stewart and the 25-year anniversary of that putt. He did have a little bit of the same thing, which was that cupped wrist, which gives you the visual that it's further back than it is, I believe. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it's Zach Johnson gripped the putter in his palm or his lifeline, which is, you know, a way to do it. And so to have some leverage where it doesn't break down, he would cup his wrist and kind of lock it in. Like, they're still moving naturally, but it's just a different sensation than somebody that grips it differently. So that was a, you know, there are functional matchups in golf. And that was certainly one of them. And so, yeah, it's finding that those things that work for you, basically.
And the grip for you is just a way to control that, to get that putter in the same position where the putter can dynamically do its thing.
That's right. You know, as I've matured in my golfing career as a teacher, I used to really be adamant that, you know, hey, you should really grip it this way, you know, because biomechanically, this is how it works and blah, blah, blah. But as I've matured, you know, there are several ways to grip it. But again, it comes down to being functional. And if it's, you know, if it is in the palm or the lifeline, well, you better make sure your forearms are square and this is how you do it. And again, with Zach, you put your hands back just a slight bit, but the putter always returned to square, and that's all you can ask for, basically. So yeah, there are functional matchups out there. If you know, let's say you can work around certain things related to grip, and there are grip sizes and all that stuff too. But again, as what I look for as a teacher, is it swinging the way it's weighted, and is it coming back to square without any effort, basically?
You can cover a lot of that with a student using videos. So somebody who's halfway around the world, you can really get at these proper positions and what have you. They don't have to come to Dallas, as great as it would be. You're saying you can accomplish a lot virtually right now.
Oh yeah, I do it all the time. It's fun. It's easy, basically. I know what to look for, and it's, you know, we'll have a conversation and what are your tendencies and this and that, and then send me videos. And, you know, I always like to have people send me a full video, like the walk into the ball, because that's where I get most of my clues about what's going to happen with the stroke. And so, yeah, I have very specific, like, things that I look for and need to be filmed. And then, you know, again, even if it's not in person, the fix is usually pretty simple.
You have a student come to you with an unconventional grip. I mean, is that something, do you ask, like, how long have you had that grip? Or do you know that maybe if I change it this way and it might fix your stroke a little bit more? How do you tackle somebody with that?
Boy, that's a great question. Again, as I matured, I used to be the first thing that I would change. Oh, you know, that we got to change your grip.
Right.
I don't do it unless absolutely necessary. You know, we're going to change some other things first. And, you know, again, is it swinging functionally? And if it's not, hey, are you open to that? And if you're not, then okay, then maybe we have to work around it a little bit, or, you know, that's, I mean, but there are definitely more ways than one to grip.
But there's probably a reason why they went to that grip to begin with. I would think, you would think they started in a conventional sense and then all of a sudden it started going haywire. So then they see other people doing the different types of grips and it worked for a while. And then they, back to your point of them always searching for something, you know. I guess sure. That's where they say, oh, this works for a little bit. Let me try this.
Yeah. You know, the one thing that I have seen through the years is when the lead hand, let's say the left hand for a right-handed golfer is in, let's say, doesn't have enough leverage where, and the right hand takes over and the left hand breaks down and that becomes a pattern, you know, then that's when people go to a left hand low or to a claw or things like that. And I get it. And sometimes a grip change can restore the balance. But again, sometimes the damage has been done. Like there's too many memories in that. And so keep the claw grip or keep the left hand low. But, you know, if you're going to do that, let's make a couple of adjustments. Like I'll give you an example, like left hand low, fine. The pitfall of that is you extend your arm so much that it gets locked out of the elbow. And so... Mm-hmm. And then it's hard to release the putter naturally. So can we bend your elbow and let it release a little bit more? So there are ways around grips. And I get it that sometimes you just can't putt conventionally anymore because you just have too many bad memories. And so we'll find something functional for you. But, you know, it all has to do with can the putter swing the way it's weighted without any manipulation? That's what we're looking for.
Pat, junior golf is one of the fastest growing sports out there right now. And I know, you know, people that have kids, a lot of them love golf themselves. The mom, the dad, they love golf. They want their kids to play the game. Kids are probably seeking out lessons and seeking out leagues and events and tournaments at a very young age. Tell us a little bit about being an instructor. Like at what age, you know, should these kids really be exposed to what type of instruction as it comes to putting?
Oh, wow. That's a good question too. You want it to be as instinctive as possible when you're younger. You know, you don't want them, first of all, they don't have the bandwidth, the attention span, for, you know, younger golfer, you know, you want them, maybe you make a couple simple adjustments in the setup just, and then you just let them go. And so I'm not a big believer in too much instruction when you're young, unless the patterns that you're creating are really not very good. But, you know, most of the time with a kid, they're going to be in a reasonably athletic setup and reasonably, you know, good fundamentals, especially when it comes to putting. And that's, you know, the swing's a whole different thing. And there are much better, there are a lot of teachers out there that specialize in kids when it comes to that too. And I appreciate them. But yeah, if I did get a younger golfer, we're going to keep it as simple as possible, maybe make one change. And then, you know, it's all hand-eye coordination. And if you can just develop that, and, you know, I mentioned this on a podcast a while ago with you guys that just rolling a ball to the hole just to get a sense of feel with your hand, you know, just to get that hand-eye coordination. So much of golf and so much of sports are hand-eye coordination. So, you know, when you get kids that play golf, make sure they're playing other things too. You know, make sure they're playing catch or they're, you know, hitting a baseball or whatever it may be, because you can't have too much of that hand-eye coordination.
Yeah, that's great. I know we the parents everywhere are asking us, you know, how do I get these kids in and how do we do it the right way so that they can really, really enjoy the game? And, you know, as you said, just letting them have fun, sticking to the athletic stuff. That's a great deal. And, you know, by the time some of them are 9 or 10, they're quite proficient at the game. I mean, as we all know, you know, they're literally club champion level golfers now at ages that you wouldn't have ever believed.
I can attest to that. I have a 15-year-old son right now who likes to play junior golf, and it's nice that, you know, I don't do a whole lot of instruction out there, that the putter does the instruction for him, his Seymour putter. But every now and then, you know, he knows when he hits a bad putt, and every now and then he'll ask for, you know, how's my posture, how's my setup and so forth. And so it's the little things of him just practicing his aim and knowing where his alignment is actually gives him the most confidence of all, of just making sure he makes a good stroke every single time. So that's one thing I do with him. And when we do play golf, as I, you know, just always check his alignment on every putt and ask him where he's aiming, just so that he can trust at setup when he's looking down the line. Okay, that's where I should feel with my body, and that red dot is allowing me, when I don't see it, feel that same way. And so now when I don't, if I make a good putt, great, but if I don't, I know what I've done wrong. So it's, you know, it's one of those things that has helped out quite a bit for him, is just knowing where he's aimed every single time.
That's huge. And, you know, and it's a good point too, that when it comes to instruction for kids, boy, I don't think you can go wrong when it's player driven. You know, hey, dad, mom, I'd really like to get some help. Can somebody help me with this? Or as opposed to, hey, let's go. You know, sometimes it just kind of works itself out long term. Maybe the kid's going to get frustrated at some point and go, I need some help. And they're much more receptive to instruction, no matter what age, when it's player driven, basically.
You know, one thing we haven't talked about before we end is, I mentioned it just a second ago, is alignment. And I know that's, you know, a big key in putting, is I find that everyone, when they call here or they pick up a Seymour, that's the first thing they is corrected all the time, is just knowing where they're aimed. And you mentioned last podcast that Zach would aim right and VT would aim left. Was that due to setup or ball position, or why would they find themselves aiming more left and so forth, or Zach aiming more right?
Devon had, his shoulders were very open and he didn't have a very functional grip, which led to that. So, you know, your head's attached to your neck, which is attached to your shoulders. So if you open your shoulders, your eye line's probably going to go to the left too. So your face is going to be square to your eye line, which would be left. And then you tend to look away from your body too much to, you know, convince yourself that you're aiming correctly. So left aim looks too far to the right. And then Zach had, you know, more of a closed stance and his head was a little bit cocked to the right. So his eye line was to the right. So everything's going to look square, but it's too far right. And then you look more over your shoulder at your target. So that's the alignment piece. And, you know, when you do that too, you're probably going to see that red dot on one side or the other. But, you know, when you get your nose over your sternum, basically, and essentially over the shaft of the putter, you don't really see that red dot, and the two white lines frame the black shaft nicely. And so then your eyes are square. And then when they're square, you're much more apt to look out in front of you, as opposed to across your body or away from you. So your eyes triangulate right out in front of you. And that's the beauty of a chalk line or a hardwood floor, where you can tell. And so it's all about the look. Alignment is all about the look. Even if you aim incorrectly, but you know how to look, you're immediately going to go, oh boy, I'm off. And then you just move your base. And that's, you know, where the hardwood floor comes in, where you can see what a square stance is, basically. So that's the companion piece. Knowing where you're aiming is everything in putting.
So would Z, before he started using Seymour, would he pull putts and VT would push putts?
Correct, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, and they could make it work sometimes. I mean, right. You look at a tour level and those guys have the greatest hand-eye coordination of, you know, they're elite in that respect. But it doesn't always work, and then there's inconsistency. But some guys are wired to fix it, and some guys just kind of, you know, play well at times despite it. And it's all up to the individual. They want to really, truly get better.
Wow, that's fantastic. Hey, I've really enjoyed this. I know that this little 1-2 punch, 57 and 58, with Pat O'Brien, Seymour's global ambassador, the greatest putting instructor we've ever known. And we really appreciate having you on. It's fun to see you, you know, with the video podcast. And I know that our listeners are going to be very excited to do that as well. So we will retouch base. I think there's a lot more we can do to take your visions and your aim of helping golfers have more fun in the game through better putting and spread the word on that. So we will promise you that in 2024, we'll do that. It's the 25-year anniversary of the Seymour Putter Company. It's the 25-year anniversary of Payne Stewart's greatest putt in U.S. Open history and one of the great putting years of all times. And it's, you know, it's Masters Week. And, you know, Zach Johnson is a guy that, you know, we know he's going to the Hall of Fame. So the fundamentals for those guys were very, very important. They were going to be professional golfers under any scenario, but they became great professional golfers when their putting became something that they felt good about and they could rely on, and they felt like they eliminated variables. So that's Seymour, that's Rifle Scope Technology. That's what we're here to do on the Putting Couch, is to help you learn something about putting and that hopefully you can take out to the golf course yourself. So we'll touch base with you soon, Pat.
Love it, Jimmy. Love talking to you guys. Teddy, thank
you. Thanks,
POB. All right.
Thanks, POB. Okay, bye.
Bye.
We appreciate you joining us. If you haven't subscribed to the show, make sure you do wherever you're listening. Be sure to leave a rating and review, because that's how we get the Putting Couch podcast content in front of more people. Also, take a screenshot and share it on social media and tag us at Seymour Putters or hashtag Team Seymour.